Chapter 46. Quogley Mars hadn't eaten. He would eat later, if at all, with the servants. But tonight, it didn't bother him. He wandered the tables and played whatever asinine music the threadbare nobles requested. He accepted their applause and moved on, eager to please the next batch of up-jumped plebeians. After dinner, the castle was opened up, and the tables spirited away, so the nobles could mingle and have a chance to pay their respects and exchange a few words with the new queen. Entertainments had been spread through numerous rooms with desserts and liqueurs. Quogley waited until the party had been going for a while before he mounted the platform where the high table had been. The guards who wandered the party had all wandered out, and several of the kingdom's more important nobles were in the room, and, most important, Queen Grayson wasn't. Leaning his head down as if oblivious to them all, he began playing as only Quogley Mars could play. For years, he knew, students of music would test their hand against this. Could they manage this overture in the time their tutors told them Quogley Mars had played it? And some of them, doubtless, would crash through it with Quogley's speed, and afterward, their tutors would tell them the difference between hitting notes and milking them. Quogley played impetuosity and youth, fervor and passion, sudden flares of anger, tempestuous, never slowing. Around that driving center, he wrapped sweetness and love and sorrow, pride against love, scaling higher and higher, with tragedy following a step behind. Then, before the resolution, he stopped abruptly. There was a moment of silence. The Cretans were all looking at him, silent, expectant, not knowing if they could clap yet. He dipped his head, not even this perturbing him. The applause was thunderous, but Quogley held up a hand quickly, silencing it. The room held perhaps 200 nobles, at least 100 hangers-on, and dozens of servants. Miraculously, there were still no guards, and what speaking Quogley had to do, he had to do without interference. "Today," he said in his stage voice, which carried better than a shout, "I wish to play something new that I have written for you, and all I ask is that you allow me to finish. This song was commissioned by someone you know, but someone who is more special than you know. It was, in fact, commissioned by the Shinga of your Sakage. I swear every word of this song is true. I call it the Song of Secrets, and your Shinga wishes me to dedicate it to Queen Grayson."
"That's plenty far, Sergeant Gamble," Scarred Rabble said, stepping out of the shadows in a doorway that connected one of the side rooms with the great hall. With a practiced hand, he slid an arm between the sergeant's rich cloak and his back, and cut through leather to bring the point of a dagger to rest against the man's spine. "There's nothing in there that interests you. What are you bastards doing in the great hall? No theft nor murder. And that's all you need to know, Sergeant. It's Commander Gamble now. It'll be the late Commander Gamble if you move that hand another inch. Ah, point taken. In case you're thinking of raising an alarm, you might want to take a careful look around the room and tell me what you see." Commander Gamble looked. 8 royal guards were in the room. six of them were conversing individually with young male noblemen that the commander didn't recognize. The two others were stationed on either side of Queen Grayson and not talking to anyone, as they were commanded not to while guarding the queen. However, another group of three nobles near them did seem especially vigilant now that Commander Gamble studied them. He cursed aloud. He'd had no idea the Sakage even had so many wet boys.
Let me guess that if anyone raises the alarm, you have orders?
If you cooperate, not only will you and all these men live, but no one will blame you afterward. You might even keep your job.
Why should I believe you?
Commander Gamble asked.
Because I don't need to lie. I've got 2 dozen friends and a knife in your back.
2 dozen? Commander Gamble chewed on that for a moment.
Well then, he said, why don't we get a drink? I've got a special bottle, down in the kitchens.
Food paused, poised inches from open mouths, forgotten. Servants froze in the act of collecting glasses. For a moment, no one breathed. In a city of fatal secrets, Quogley Mars had told everyone that he knew the greatest secret of them all. If that was the prequel to his song, what would his song hold? Quogley presided over the silence like the maestro he was, a smug smirk tugging at his lips. He judged the silence as if it were music, each beat of rest landing in perfect order. Then, a moment before the revelation could spark a firestorm of comment, he lifted one finger. From the crowd, a woman's voice broke in a single, high, clear note she held for impossibly long. And then, never pausing for a breath, it devolved into a plaintive run, and finally words, decrying loneliness. All eyes turned to a barrel-chested soprano in ivory that no one recognized. As she sang, she strode through the crowd until she joined Quogley on his platform. His voice joined hers, crossing and interweaving melodies, even as the words clashed, lovers singing of love, and love denied. From the corners of the room, the instruments, light viol and muscular bass and harp, played against the voices, but by the magic of music, each stood clear. The repetition of the vocal pleas against the instrumental injunctions allowed the ear to follow one and then the next, and the next. Had it been speech, it would have been unintelligible. But in music, every line was pellucid, individuated, stark in its call. A sister's passion, a brother's confusion, youth in turmoil, society frowning condemnation, secrets born in the bedchambers of an exalted house. A woman defiant, passionate, letting nothing stand in her way. Though he didn't name them, Quogley had taken no pains to conceal the objects of his song, but as always, some nobles caught on earlier than others. Those who understood couldn't believe what they were hearing. They searched the room for guards, sure that someone must stop this beautiful outrage. But no guard was at his post. The Sakage had chosen this night to unveil its power. There was no way this could be an accident. This room, which held 200 of the kingdom's elite, now swelling ever more as the curious came to see what held everyone transfixed, was normally protected by at least a dozen of the queen's guard. Quogley sang treason. and no one stopped him. The beauty of the music and the seduction of a rumor held the nobles in a spell. It was Quogley's masterpiece. No one had ever heard such music. The strings warred with each other, and the forbidden love warred with itself. The music, claiming this twisted love, was love indeed, even as the boy twisted against his conscience and the woman demanded her rights as a beloved. Then, as they sang, finally in harmony, having declared an armistice, surrendering to a forbidden love which must remain secret, a new voice joined the fray. A young soprano, lean, in a simple white dress, joined Quogley and the mezzo-soprano, singing notes of such purity they tore at the heart. In her innocence, she stumbled upon a secret that would wreck a royal house. The brother never knew. The elder sister saw all she had, all she desired, threatened by her own sister. And in her conflicted heart, she hatched a desperate plan. Unnoticed by the rapt nobles, a young man had entered the chamber only moments after the first notes sounded. Luke Grayson made no move to silence Quogley Mars. From the back of the room, he only listened. The voice of Natasha Grayson spiraled into the hole, betrayed by her own blood. Murdered. She wailed, her voice discordant, fading into oblivion, her life a sacrifice to a perversion. The music played the matching leitmotifs of Fatal Secrets and Scenaria once again.
No!
Luke Grayson screamed. The musicians cut off the last, lingering notes in shock. Luke burst through the doors, fleeing. No one followed.